but much less when water comes in. Something like that, I do believe, must have happened, something incredible that convinced the skeptical, and who would not be skeptical to some degree, among the Israelites that God was really protecting them and really was in their midst and really did operate on their behalf in the here and now. And the evidence for that is that the oldest passage on linguistic grounds in the whole Hebrew Bible, the oldest of all of the passages is this, which I will read you. It is purportedly the song of, and I quote, Miriam the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, and therefore the sister of Moses, unless there's half-sister relations involved. In any case, she took the timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out with her with timbrels and dances. And Miriam answered them, and this is what she says, and this is what is, I am told, the oldest passage in the whole Hebrew Bible. Sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea. It happened. And the effect of this seemingly miraculous deliverance is with us still. Then, of course, as you know, the Israelites wander for the symbolic number of 40 years in the wilderness. That's a little hard to take literally. There's not much out there. But in any case, they wander for a good long while. And while they are out there, they return, as in the promise, to the mountain of God, Mount Horeb, now called Mount Sinai, where they get the definitive version of the covenant, the definitive version of the law, the Torah. The law really consists of lots more than the Ten Commandments. Reputedly, there are 613, but the ten are the biggest, and here they are. I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. That is the proof text and the justification for what follows. You obey me and you will prosper just as you did prosper, even when there seems to be no possible reason that you could. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is. You shall not bow down to or serve such images, for I, the Lord, your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation, but showing mercy to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. Do well and prosper, do ill and don't. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. Honor your father and your mother. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Don't lie in court or otherwise. And an interesting one. You shall not covet your neighbor's house, or your neighbor's wife, or his male servant, female servant, and so on. Two things about that are a little bit surprising. One is the endorsement of property, and two is the fact that coveting is an entirely internal act. This is the first instance that we get of an ethical concern, not with behavior, which is presumably under your control, but with disposition and emotional state, which is much, much, much more difficult to control. There's an implication here that it matters not just to act well, but to be well or to be good. It's not just what you do, it's who you are. And that is a distinction which comes to full exfoliation in later Judaism and in Christianity, and is not characteristic, as we'll shortly see, of ancient Greece at all. Just not, zero, Again, this is such second nature to us that it's hard to imagine a world without it, and yet such there was. The short take: obey and prosper. But of course, even after they're established in Israel, the Hebrews don't obey.